Welcome to The Last Thing I Saw. This is the latest series of festival podcasts, and this time we're at IDFA, International Documentary Festival, Amsterdam. And for this inaugural episode, I'm very happy to be with a prior guest. We spoke last year, and that's Julian Ross.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me back, Nick. My name's Julian Ross. I'm an Amsterdam-based programmer and teacher also at Leiden University. I'm co-programming the upcoming edition of Doc Fortnite. And here at IDFA, I'm a film program advisor since earlier this year.
And just in case you hear any background noise, we're in the International Theater Amsterdam, which is kind of, I don't know, one of the kind of home bases for the festival for this year. I guess we can just sort of dive into things. You know, people who are listening may have read news out of the festival of what's transpired.
Yeah, it's important to give an impression of what's been happening at IDFA. And I know people have been following probably online within Amsterdam, outside Amsterdam, in different parts of the world. So, you know, I'll try and give a little bit of a recap of what's been going on. And inevitably, I'm not going to be able to cover every action and statement that's been taking place. But yeah, I think it's a very important thing that's been happening at the festival, and it's ongoing, I should note as well, because we're halfway through the festival and there's 5 or 6 more days to come. So, well, October 7th happened, and there have been demonstrations in support of Palestine in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, over the past few weeks. And groups like Workers for Palestine, which are cultural workers, doing some solidarity protest actions across different cities in the country, have been involved in various protests, including, I believe it was them too, one at the Rijksmuseum, which is a museum here in Amsterdam that has been staging exhibitions on colonization, looking at the colonial history of the Netherlands, yet had remained silent in the midst of this current conflict. And in reaction to that, they had thrown paint onto the passageway, this kind of tunnel, blood-colored paint. So these kind of events at cultural institutions have been taking place in Amsterdam. And then we get to the opening, which I wasn't present for. During the opening, there was a protest action where there was banners, call for ceasefire, but also one banner that said the slogan, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." And this has subsequently caused some controversy. And from what I understand, I'm an advisor, but I'm not at the festival office and part of the kind of decisions involved in that. But there's been a lot of pressure around this slogan, which led to IDFA the next day calling for ceasefire in a statement, and then also a statement released pretty much at the same time, simultaneously, basically saying that this slogan should not be used by anybody anywhere. Again, this caused a lot of anger, especially in the community in support of Palestine, because the slogan was in the Dutch court ruled as not hateful just recently. And I know a lot of anti-Semitic groups have used it and things like this, but its roots are with the solidarity with Palestine movement, and it's looking for equality in that space. So many filmmakers, in response to this statement, have withdrawn their film. I can say a few from the top of my head: Miko Revereza, Mariam Tafakori, Kaori Oda, Joshua Gensolens, Charlie Shackleton, Tara Long. There's been an installation at the iFilm Museum by the Institute of Time called Shadow Time that's been closed as well in response to this. So there's been a big movement of filmmakers in solidarity of Palestine. There's also the Palestine Film Institute, who are present in the market here, who had organized a pitch session for Palestinian filmmakers, and that space became a very emotional place, not just about what's happening in Gaza, but also IDFA's statement and things. IDFA subsequently made another statement as well, I should note. And again, this situation is ongoing. But I think one thing is to say is that a program that they had prepared way before this called Corresponding Cinemas became a place where discussion could take place, like a dialogue. And there's something final about statements and actions. And I think that's very important to make a stance. But it was great to have also a space where conversation could take place, sometimes with films, sometimes without them, in a space where I felt all voices were respected. And, there wasn't the kind of institutional time pressure that we feel often in film festivals from one screening to the next. The conversation was what everybody was there for.
No, that was a really interesting program, and the idea was connecting filmmakers, and I mean, as I understand it, it's part of the idea of it is that it kind of takes a life of its own in a way, because like an initial filmmaker is chosen who then chooses who they might want to dialogue with, so it kind of takes an organic life of its own. And so I don't know, I thought that was pretty cool that that was already organized, it wasn't something like thrown together.
No, totally. So it's a beautiful idea, I think, and I've heard Oruwa say that he had something like it in mind for a while, but had a conversation at the Berlinale with Sky Hopinka, who shared with Oruwa that he is inspired by the filmmaking of Basma Al-Sharif. So what they did was Itfa approached Basma Al-Sharif, asked her who she's inspired by. She said Jumana Mana, and then it's like a bit of a chain. At least in the program, the shape it takes, Itfa do not have a hand in picking who's going to come or which film beyond the first person, you know? And it kind of unfolds. And I think, for example, Sky chose Basma's films to show and this things like this. So,
And you went to one of these discussions? Yeah.
Yeah, I went to what I thought would be a conversation between Basma Al-Sharif and Jumana Mana, which was kind of halfway through the afternoon. But when I arrived, things had already taken place. Basma had withdrawn her presence at the festival, so was not showing her film and is no longer part of the Envision competition jury. So they had a discussion around the Itfa statement, and some people, including Basma, Sky, and others, had prepared a statement. So that had taken place. Oruwa was present, and you know, other people at Itfa also in the film community are present for this. And when I arrived, Basma Al-Sharif, I should say, is a Palestinian filmmaker from Gaza. And Jumana Mana is also from Palestine, but in the north. And she had said at that moment that she hadn't. She was going to show her film. She subsequently withdrawn the film for screenings later in the festival. And Sky Hopinka moderated the conversation instead. And yeah, Jumana Mana did a beautiful job, I think, of situating, well, just giving a recap of the conversations that have been taking place, reiterating the importance to support the slogan. And then her film, which is her first film from 2010, called Bless, Bless the Oblivion, a 20-minute short film was screened, and it's about male spaces in East Jerusalem, like weightlifting rooms, hairdressers. And, you know, these are men who aren't given a social space for dialogue, and you know, they gather in these limited spaces to have these conversations. They talked about they're not perfect men in the sense that they're crude and crass sometimes, very misogynist statements coming out, but nevertheless, Jumana is there with her camera, speaking as equals, and it's a really warm film despite some of the things that he said. And that led to a conversation about imperfect resistance, you know, different shapes resistance can take, and you know, we're always in search of a perfect one, but it's seemingly never there. And, you know, also the fact that Arab men of this region are often made into criminals by Western media, and also treated as disposable in the kind of language around the war. So, you know, the film triggered a beautiful conversation that became a continuation of what's already been spoken about. Again, I think, you know, there were subsequent screenings. I didn't attend those, but the little kind of moment I was there, 1 hour, I felt the space Itfa Vondelpark, which is a new space for Itfa that they're going to run year-round for documentary film. I think part of their intention is to create a space like this for dialogue, discussion, and I think that ideal of a film festival creating that space was really actualized in the corresponding cinemas program. Yeah.
I'm glad we talked about that one. You know, I also went to a number of screenings. I did go to one screening that was of a Palestinian filmmaker's film, and that film was Life is Beautiful, Mohammed Jabali. And so, I mean, he did present the film, you know, he did an introduction, you know, being pretty frank and candid about sharing his pain in the moment. I think he referred to his Itfa family, yeah. Which I thought was kind of interesting. And the movie itself is a kind of movie that exists in an in-between space. It's about his experiences when he went to Norway and, you know, was working in Norway. But then Norway basically was ejecting him after a certain point, you know, and but he couldn't get back into Gaza. And this is, you know, not even recent history.
Actually, 2014, yeah.
So a lot of the movie is just him kind of hanging on and trying to keep his spirits up in Norway as he's figuring out whether he's going to get, you know, A, enough time in Norway to figure out what to do next, and then B, of course, make his way back into Gaza. So it's this curious combination of, like, tension, but also he's a kind of, like, open emotionally person, and he's front and center in the movie. He can be very, like, bubbly, but also, you know, kind of crumble from the understandable pressure. And you also had seen, I guess, earlier, Life is Beautiful.
Yes. I should mention that Mohamed Jabali is a co-founder of the Palestine Film Institute. So he's been present for those pitch sessions and also the demonstration, very present for all that's happening around it for right now. The film, it's an important reminder that this isn't an isolated moment in the history of this situation between Israel and Palestine. 2014 was, I believe, the previous large-scale attack on Gaza. Mohamed was in Norway giving a workshop to, I believe, film students, and then is unable to go back for a very long time, it seems. And he is in Norway trying to get a working visa, and there's all these bureaucratic struggles. There's constant experience of uncertainty that I think you really feel in the film, because he is a bubbly, you know, warm character, thankfully, in these situations, but even so, you see the kind of pressure of something that's out of his hands weighing on him all the time. And it's beautiful to see that there can be a solidarity that emerges with the people around him, and the Norwegian film community embrace him and try to convince the government to accept his presence in Norway as a filmmaker and therefore give him a working visa.
Yeah, toward the end of the movie, he does end up going to London in England, and in that case, festivals, basically film festivals, become a kind of refuge at that point. And then the ending, in terms of coming back, there's no illusions about how rough that is as well. His previous film, which I think showed at IDFA, is called Ambulance.
Yeah, so his film Ambulance was selected for IDFA in 2016, and I believe he wasn't able to attend because of all these visa complications back then. So, yeah, but he had shot that footage before he left Gaza.
And I guess maybe as a promotional thing, he had like an actual like ambulance or something. And at one point he has a shot toward the end of the movie of the ambulance just being crushed at a junkyard, and it comes after everything, and it's just this kind of there's something very visceral and like physical about the feeling of that after you're kind of existing in this like liminal space.
Yeah, I think that ambulance had been traveling at film festivals, because there's one point in the film where you see the ambulance next to the eye.
That's right. Of course.
So, but he wasn't able to go, but the ambulance was, which is, it's amazing that he's here speaking, considering his, you know, what his family is going through, his friends right now in Gaza. And I think that's been really felt in the moments where he has stood up to speak.
So that is Life is Beautiful. And maybe we can talk about another couple of films. We're talking at like a kind of snapshot in time in the festival. And I had been planning to talk about this movie. Happily, Julian knows it well. And that's Gama.
So Gama is the latest film by Kaori Oda, who's a Japanese filmmaker from Osaka. She's been making amazing films for a while now. She was part of the Beiletar School. She made a film called Aragane about a coal mine. And then Cenote in Mexico. And these are films that I would describe in the tradition of like what you see with Leviathan, the Harvard Sensory Ethnography Lab. So really a sensory experience of a space. And I think even heightened by the fact that the filmmaker, who is Japanese, is in a place that's elsewhere. So there's not really much dialogue or conversation or information situating the space. You're just thrown in. Here she makes a film in Japan, in Okinawa. And before I start on the film, actually, I have to say that she withdrew her film from the festival in support of Palestine and against the statement that IDFA made. So this is why you couldn't see the film.
Right.
I was able to see it, and I was in conversation with her for a talk at IFRA earlier during the festival. So the film is like a 55-minute film shot on 16mm, or analog film at least, in Gamas of Okinawa. Gama is natural caves in Okinawa. It's basically around the history of the Battle of Okinawa, where people of Okinawa were told if American soldiers come, they will be committing a mass murder and they will all die. So what happened was these inhabitants of this part of Okinawa ran away into these caves and escaped and waited. And many of them committed mass suicide, you know, in fear or in preparation perhaps of what might happen to them when the American soldiers come. So that's the history of Gama. And what she does is she goes with there's a tour guide holding a torch in the Gama, telling these stories of what took place and his activities of collecting bones there for the families and also for history. So that's the kind of structure of the film. And what Kaori Oda has kind of staged is a dancer who's a filmmaker also called Nao Yoshigai, who is like wearing this blue dress, kind of doing this performance that's almost like, you know, a wild animal, but just kind of observing this conversation, what's happening, just being present in the space. She's kind of a spirit in the space, witnessing what's going on. Yeah, so that's kind of the structure of the film. The film is one part of several other parts that's going to make a feature-length film, apparently, called Underground.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully we'll get to see soon. But it's about underground spaces in Japan. So this is the cave. She's also going to Sapporo, northern Japan, Hokkaido, where she's shot footage of underground spaces like sewers and things like that. And other parts of Japan, other kinds of underground spaces. But yeah, this was Gama.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I love that project. It kind of reminds me there was a Spanish filmmaker here 4 or 5 years ago who was filming like all the underground spaces in a city in Spain. I'm embarrassed to say. I can't remember. Really amazing as well. So that's Gama, which hopefully I'll find a way to see at some point.
The reason why I kind of shared her other films and what they're like is because this is such a different cinematic approach to those. The camera is static. She usually works as a cinematographer for her own films, but for this one, not. So she's really trying out a different approach to documentary. So, you know, if there are any listeners familiar with her film, I think that's an additional reason to check this out, to see her try something completely different and really excel at it.
Yeah. Can you just say the filmmaker's name again, just for you?
Kaori Oda.
So, yeah, more to look forward to from her. Moving along to a couple more films from this year's program. One that we've both seen is called Silence of Reason. Filmmaker's name is Kumyana Novikova, who also has a body of work where she deals with archives and kind of digging into archives. And in this case, the focus is on basically the war crimes, specifically rape as the war crimes perpetrated during the Bosnian War. And this movie draws on archives at The Hague from the war crime tribunals in 2000, I believe. And basically what she's done is she's taken transcripts from survivors and also a little bit of audio. There was a Q&A afterwards or a talk afterwards. You know, she elaborated on the archives and I mean, strangely enough, the transcripts are all translated into English because it's an international court. But also, there's not a lot of audio that's actually very easily publicly available. The videos it's drawing on are from the 90s, so it's from these kind of camcorder-looking video. And what the videos are like mostly landscapes from the area in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And also the text of the transcripts, which she puts on screen in a style kind of blocky typeface with testimony, and it's a matter of like inhabiting these spaces and kind of almost like bringing these voices back. And the accounts are horrific, but also aspects of these crimes, that such as the fact that there's at one point an account of two women who were actually kidnapped and enslaved in Montenegro, which at the time was actually not a wartime country. And they were just held captive there outside of the battle zones. You just get a sense of the complete saturation or pervasiveness of this, you know. It's not like that can be localized either to like the battle, to the war space. That's just something that just becomes pervasive. And yeah, it's a haunting film.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible film. What you see is basically landscapes. And of course, yeah. You know, these are events that were not recorded. And I think the film in its form is trying to find a language to, you know, represent this horrific atrocities that took place to these women. It was a calculated mass rape that took place in the municipality Focha in the eastern region. Mm-hmm. What is important is that these testimonies in the Yugoslavia tribunal led to rape during war not being seen as like a consequence of war, but like actually part of the war machinery, like a weapon and as a war crime. And that was very important that, well, these women, despite what they experienced, had the courage to voice this and share their experiences. And this has led to, you know, not just this war, but other wars, to consider rape a war crime. And for those who are coordinating this mass rape to be declared as war criminals.
Yeah.
But yeah, the film itself, you know, you just see these landscape shots, presumably of these areas where these events took place. And, you know, it's in a long line of tradition of landscape films, thinking around the questions of whether landscape is witness, or like, is it that spaces contain that history of things that take place, or do they hold that moment? Mm-hmm. In a way, it's pretty cold in its delivery, right? The film, not much sound, just like little crackles. You just follow the text and the minute details of what happened, that the woman that shared. It's a really a tough viewing, but one that's very important to share. And
I mean, yeah, another thing that the kind of eeriness of the video and the landscapes does is it gives you a sense of, and this also comes through in the testimonies, just how the pace of the war, when the moment somehow turned and people were basically being rounded up by their neighbors. So yeah, I don't know that I'm going to be able to say much more eloquent on the film. I hope people get to see it soon.
Yeah, how do you visualize the unspeakable, right? Yeah, how to represent what happened, you know, without reducing the immensity of this crime.
Yeah.
Is what the film is grappling with throughout, I think, yeah.
Yeah. There are also these kind of like decisions and micro decisions of presentation. Silence of Reason. Also, it's a medium length, I would say, movie. I think it's 63 minutes, yeah. I mean, there was a couple other films you want to mention or screening experiences. I know 1489 is one film that you like a lot.
Yeah, 1489. And Limitation and the international competition are amazing films. And I haven't been able to travel much during this year. My son was born in spring, so I've been using Itfa to also catch up with some films, including Orlando Political Biography, which is a beautiful film from Berlinale. And that became a space for this conversation around the support for Palestine to continue, in fact. The screening and Q&A ended with invited by the moderators, people singing a chant for the end of all of this, a ceasefire. And then I also went to the screening of Wang Bing's Man in Black, which took place in Tuchinski 1, which turned out to be an amazing location for this film because it's shot in Paris in a theater, Théâtre du Nord, I think.
Right.
Kind of a theater that's kind of quite old. A bit like the Tuchinski, if anybody has ever visited the beautiful Amsterdam Historic Theater. It has all these balconies, and there's some scenes where the subject of the film is walking and across this the Théâtre du Nord balcony, and it really felt like almost the spirit of this man was in this space, and what was on the image of the screen was echoing the actual space as well. And yeah, it was just a perfect programming decision, I think, to present this film in Tuchinski 1.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. That's a Man in Black. Special experience to see it here. And I think we might bring things in for an ending there. Yeah, thank you, Julian, for walking us through and describing things as they're still unfolding here. Is it still just like a snapshot? But thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Last Thing I Saw with host Nicholas Rapold. You can support the podcast by signing up at rapold.substack.com. Thank you for listening.